You're listening to Lighting Up Real Estate with your host, Kendall Lockett.
If you're planning to purchase your first property or first home in 2021, you are going to need credit as a part of your financial power. Credit allows you to use other people's money instead of your own. In episode 3 of Lighting Up Real Estate, CEO of HTP Enterprises Financial, Nicholas Antoine, shared his credit secrets. Now let his company help you build wealth with credit. HTP Enterprises Financial is the company that will improve your scores by erasing negative items, bankruptcies, delinquencies, and more. I'm a personal client of HTP Enterprises Financial and have referred my clients and friends to this company. You get results. So I partnered with HTP Enterprises Financial to offer my listeners $100 off any plan you choose. Just go to the link in the show notes using promo code LightingUpRealEstate. Make 2021 the year you use credit as buying power. Today, we are lighting up how to joint venture in real estate. As always, the goal of this show is to shine a light on people, strategies, systems, and ideas that can help you grow your real estate investing business. And on the show today, I have a real estate investor, my personal mentor, and my high school classmate, Cleon Coleman, on the show. We discuss everything. The topic of this show is how to create joint ventures in real estate, but we really discuss the fundamentals of investing and money throughout the conversation, from how to find a partner for your joint ventures to the real purpose of banks and how Cleon is using real estate to serve a higher purpose in the community. This Morehouse man has come to teach. Let's get started. Cleon, welcome to Lighting Up Real Estate.
Hey, Kendall, it's a pleasure to be here. I was looking forward to it.
Long time coming. It is.
Yes, indeed.
You still look the same.
And you as well.
Yeah.
And smell the same. This feels the same.
It does. For those that don't know, our guest today, Cleon Coleman, is my high school classmate. We grew up together. And so this is an honor. This is an honor.
Likewise.
To have you on the podcast. And this means a lot to me, considering how we grew up, to be able to talk to another real estate investor successful in Chattanooga, Tennessee. This is big.
Well, hey, likewise. It's always good to have fun and enjoy and help people at the same time. And so it's a pleasure to be able to be a part of your podcast. I'm very excited to do this with you. And I'm happy for you. I mean, I'm a big fan of just following your heart. And when we were talking beforehand, you told me that you were indeed doing that. And that's what I've been doing for the last 20 years. It's just following my heart.
And I had no idea. I would hear little things on the street and I was like, Cleon.
Yeah.
Wait, Cleon Coleman. Are you sure about that?
I'm pretty low key. Like below the radar sometimes, but,
Yeah, low key is for real. I've been sleeping on you. I have. So,
Let's wake up.
It's time, man. Woke is the word. Woke. Because you are on here today to talk about something that is incredibly dope that I definitely want other people to know about that you're doing. And you are extremely successful. And that is, you're doing everything in real estate investing pretty much. And as we talked, you said that you had a dope system for how you create your real estate joint ventures.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love for you to just share how you do that. Well, first, let's get started on how you even got into real estate investing. Then we're going right into joint ventures, because that's something that a lot of people could be doing because they either have the money mm-hmm. and don't have the time or the skills to mm-hmm. get into actually doing the rehab work, or they have the skills to do the rehab work, but they don't have the money.
Right.
And you have the answer to their problems. Well, let's get into how you got started in real estate investing.
All right. Well, I'm going to have to take you back about 25 years. I was...
Okay. We only have an hour, Cleon, now.
Okay. Thanks for the heads up. Thanks for that. That's started off. Hey, we're going to tell you a story. Okay. Bottom line is, I was on my way to being a dentist, and I was really driven by making $100,000 a year. And I knew I liked science. But then I started teaching. I started volunteering at a local elementary school across the street from Morehouse. And I fell in love with teaching, and I really began to try to answer the question, how can I do what I love and live the way I want to live at the same time and bring it all together? I didn't know I was asking that, but that's what I was asking.
Yeah.
And then I met, my hallmate, my dorm mate, had family that were all investors. And thankfully, I was able to meet all of those individuals. Mm-hmm. And they were very open with me, and they showed me a pathway that would answer that question that I just gave you. And it was by investing in real estate and being a landlord. That was my primary focus. I left college wanting to be a teacher and landlord. Okay. And that's where it started.
Okay.
And I was attracted to the monthly residual income potential of owning rentals.
Mm-hmm.
How did I deal with that?
Great. Okay. But then you went from somehow, I think, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I think the cup overflowed for you in the 2008 market crash.
Yeah. So I bought my first place in 2002 and 2004. And in 4 years, I really couldn't find a deal that met my criteria. So in retrospect, that was a good thing because it allowed me to learn how to manage those three units. I had a duplex in the house.
Okay.
Gave me a chance to learn how to manage those first before mm-hmm. you can grow too fast, you know?
Right.
So I was able to do that. And then in 08 hit, and then things just took off, and I began to buy more rentals. And I started to apply the Burr method, which is buy, rehab, rent, rinse and repeat, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I just did it over and over again. And so next thing you know, I was in a situation where and let me also pause and say, I only taught for 4 years. I became I did enter pharmaceutical sales in corporate America, which is great. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I didn't want my career progression to be dependent on someone. We talked about this. I didn't want my career progression to be dependent on someone else's subjective views and opinions of me. I just
didn't.
And so eventually, by burying and repeating, you know, I got to a point where, you know, my income from pharma was here. My mm-hmm. income from investing was here. But then that scale started to smooth. And then next thing you know, you look up and they're looking eye to eye. And then you keep going. And it's like now investing income's here, job income's here. And now the job is just an expression of my skill sets. And just it's just an experience.
Wow. That was big.
Yeah.
That was big. So you were just there just because you had nothing else to do. And so much like you just, I'm here.
The
you
job.
Didn't need to depend on it. The job. Yeah.
I look at a job now as fit. You know, it's like, okay, is this a good fit for me and for mm-hmm. you? Can mm-hmm. we produce good results? It's almost like it's a joint venture now. You know, a job is a joint venture now. It's not. It's so we're both trying to meet goals.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm bringing my skills and my time, and you're bringing me capital so that I can. But the key is, it's what you do with the capital.
Right.
Do you just continue to be a consumer? Or do you want to replace the you in the consumer sentence and become and free you up?
Right.
And let your assets be the consumer.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
like we talked about, there's nothing wrong with anything that you like, cars, houses, watches, vacation, whatever it is. The key question is who's going to provide the source of income for it? Now you can, but you're going to work your butt off all the time. Or you can make a shift. And you can let your investments do it.
Right.
So I chose the latter, and it takes time. So that's really all I've been doing for the last 20 years.
Right. And so pretty much what you're saying is that you're letting your investments pay all of your bills. You're living off the assets
mm-hmm.
and not off the job.
Yes.
And the job, the income that you're making from the job is feeding into more assets that are, of course, providing you more passive income.
Exactly, and it just adds velocity to the
mm-hmm.
to the whole system. And also the thing of it is, the irony of this is when you free yourself of your dependency on the job,
mm-hmm.
you actually become better at the job because your motivations are not what the typical employee's motivation is. Again, it's just an experiment. I'm in sales, so it's like I just try, it's psychology. I mean, it's just like, hey, let me try this out. Let's see how it goes.
It's not pressure.
There's no pressure. And so you get better production when it's like mm-hmm. that, because it is something that you're just wanting to do.
Okay.
Instead of having to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about joint ventures.
Okay.
Because this is something that I think, like I said earlier, can help a lot of people get into real estate investing, because a lot of us think that we have to do this by ourselves, where actually you're giving a solution. It's partnerships. And yeah. Well, not necessarily. Is partnerships the same thing as joint ventures?
Well, you know what? In preparation for this, I did come up with my own definition of what a JV is, joint venture. And what I came up with was it's a partnership with defined roles that synergistically work to produce results. The results are split in a predetermined manner. And that's all it is. So, you know, in my particular case, I'm focusing on flips with the joint, with the JV. So I bring the capital and my partner brings the time, the knowledge, the experience, and manages the project. And then we produce a good result and we split that up.
Okay. So that's what we're going to talk about, because I got a lot of questions with that. Okay. So when you decided to go that route, why did you just not just do everything yourself?
Well,
like, even though I know you work in pharmaceutical sales, why don't you just hire your own general contractor and just do your own deal? Why did you decide to partner?
Well, there's multiple reasons for that. First of all, you know, I've learned that two brains are better than one.
Yeah.
Well, a partner has a set of skills that I don't. And likewise. And, and so that's one thing. But another take home is that you can reach your, you can expand and truly grow by finding good partners. So I'd rather have 60% or 50% of the pie of six pies than 100% of one, you know, and turning into deals too. I'd rather have, you know, 50%, 40%, 60%, whatever the percent of six deals than 100% of one.
Yeah.
So that, and I learned that through the experiences, you know. I really wasn't a big partnership guy, and you gotta be careful. You gotta make sure you're with the right people,
right?
You know. But I feel like, you know, you just take one step, and God takes two, you know. And so you just we have innate ability to screen, to listen to our heart, to allow things to show up. But when they do, you act on it. And that's it. Yeah.
Okay. So how'd you find your partner?
Again, by just being out. So we met years ago and he knew I was an investor, and he had aspirations of, you know, doing some deals. And we years ago we met and we came close to, finding a couple of houses, but we didn't. And then he moved away, and then all of a sudden things came back. And so we already had this rapport and all this, we had already had this familiarity. And the deal, the right deal showed up, and we just put it into action. It went very well. And now, you know, it's like, listen, how can we duplicate this? How can we duplicate it again? And the consumer wins too, because they're getting a good product. So win-win-win situation. That's how I found. I mean, it's just actually just by being an investor, and this particular.
So we're always looking for a deal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I was able to bring what he needed to the deal.
For that first, which was the capital.
Right, and then he brought what he need. He brought the rest.
Yeah.
And then the next one, I found the house. And I was like, I got to throw it right back at you. You know, boom, let's do it again.
Yeah.
And so that's how, and we're enjoying it, you know, so.
Okay, so how do you set up a joint venture? Is this something we have to use an attorney for? Or is this something that we just get some paper, we draw up an agreement?
Bingo. That's it. It's a contract.
That's it?
Yeah, you define the roles.
Okay, do you have to create an LLC for every property? Or you do a form of business? How does it work?
No. In our particular case, it's just a contract, because only one person is buying the house. And then the
other providing the capital.
Exactly.
Okay.
So now if I have partners providing the capital, maybe the LLC, maybe we need an operating agreement and all that.
Right.
But it depends on your circumstance. All I can say is from my situation, But at the end of the day, it's just, you really just need contract and you got to communicate on a regular basis. And you got to ask yourself, is this somebody that I could work with? Mm-hmm. Would I enjoy working with them? Are our values aligned? You know, so there's some things that are just intangibles that I feel that would make the experience more pleasurable.
Okay. Say that what you just said. You said you had to make sure that you said the values are aligned.
My values are aligned. Is this a person that I can work with, would enjoy working with?
Yeah.
Are the intangibles there?
Okay. So who handles like what part of the responsibility? I know you provide the capital. So then are you just like a silent investor or are you having to look at reports, picking out materials, or does he do all that? What role do you play?
I'll walk it through. But I really do. To me, he's more creative than I am, you know, in terms of what he sees. And so I trust, it's trusting. I will walk it through. I will, monitor the situation, you know, the project. And we meet. Right. Like my biggest thing is communication. I want to see him. I want to see him. So we meet weekly, you know, and we talk on every at assigned times. That's part of the agreement, really, predetermined times. When are we going to talk? How are we going to talk? What are we going to do? And then I have my operations manager, who handles my overall portfolio. She handles the books in terms of monitoring the spend on the projects.
Okay, so to be clear for those that are listening, I want to make sure I have this correct too. You're providing capital, meaning that you're buying the property, you're paying for the material, and you're also paying the labor for like subcontractors as well.
Everything.
So his responsibility is just more so like the overseer of the entire project.
Right.
Does he do any of the work himself?
He can. He has. He doesn't really, because he's really just his primary responsibility is project management, managing the project, leading the project.
Okay.
To the end.
So you made in your agreement, you have to communicate. Have you ever had any disagreements? Like who supersedes the other? Is it you because you have a bigger stake in this than he does?
Thankfully, we haven't. So
really?
No, we haven't. Thankfully. Again, we've aligned very well. I'm so grateful for that. If we did, honestly, I stay in my lane. For instance, if I was to buy a house and renovate it and go to SunTrust, are they going to argue with me about paint color?
No.
No. So why should I? I think that pretty much sums that up.
Okay.
So if it's capital related, yeah, we can. I'm going to take the lead on it.
Right.
If it's project related, colors, paints, contractors, whatever, you take the lead of it.
Got it. So it's never been an issue of him going over budget and then you having to. That's awesome.
Again, I got to give him credit. He's better than I am.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
You understand what I'm saying? Like, can I do a flip? Yeah. Have I managed to flip all the way through? Yes. Do I enjoy it as much? No, I don't really.
You just want the money at the end.
Well, I just want the product. Here's the deal. Here's the value that I'm
okay.
At the moment where I shifted. I said, I want to invest in people. I'm shifting from investing solely in properties to investing in people. Okay. I want to help people reach their goals. I want to help people find a nice home. I want to help people, I want to be the source of lending for a person who's doing a flip, you know, or a person who's, I just want to invest in people.
Okay. Because that's what you value. That's the values right there.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. I get fulfillment out of that. I guess that's the teacher in me.
Because you're still, you have the teacher background.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I found, I really have found, I feel like it goes back to that story we talked about. You just follow your heart.
Yeah.
It leads me there.
Okay. Okay, so who finds the deals? He also finds the deals, or is it just me? No, that's
a two-way
street. Okay.
Two-way street. He found the first one.
Okay.
And then I found the second one.
Okay.
Yeah, and the third one, actually. But okay. It doesn't matter.
That frees you up. That frees you up because he's doing the houses. You find them. So that does give you an opportunity to still be in control of where your capital, where your money is going or your investments are going.
Right, right. Now, exactly. Now, for sure. Now, I got to see the house. I mean, I'm not just going blindly. Right. I'm not going to just blindly lend. I have hands on. So I need to see it. Even if he brought it to me, I'm going to walk it through first to see if hey, I'll lend on this or I'll go forward with this.
Okay.
But at least we talk. Mm-hmm. And so the variables that we look for in a flip are aligned. Okay. I think a theme is in this joint venture is alignment. Alignment of vision, alignment of values.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Alignment.
I like that. Yeah. I like that. So how long have you guys been doing this?
Just we're approaching not even a year. Not even a year.
Wow. And how many have you done so far?
Well, we completed one but we're working on two right now, and I have a third one that I'm working on bringing to the table. So that would I don't want to put, there's no limit, but four a year for me, for my model, is it would be very satisfying.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, am I limited to four? No, but four is good. I just want to make you smile this morning.
You're doing it. You're doing it. Like, it's a Sunday, and you are definitely serving. This is your ministry for sure. You're giving it.
Hey, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being my light.
Oh, thank you, Dion.
You're welcome.
Okay, so let's talk about any risk that you're taking with this capital.
Let's talk about what?
Risk.
Okay.
There's got to be some risk. So those that are listening, okay, yeah. I have money.
Yeah.
Leon's making this sound so good. It's got to be some risk that you're taking, which is
absolutely
okay. Well, so let's talk about it.
Well, okay. Well, the risk of it is that it's you know, the risk is you putting your money out there. You're exposing your capital. You're buying a product that you have to that you know that is. Is that needs some work, and you're depending on people, you're depending on crews, you know. But with anything, when it comes to investing, there's no reward without risk.
Risk, yeah.
Okay, there's no reward without risk.
Yeah.
And the riskiest thing, in my opinion, is leaving your money in the bank. That's the riskiest thing to do.
Talk because, about that.
Yeah, I mean, because...
Because you're the first investor that's mentioned that.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, hey, because there's so many risks that you by leaving your money. Opportunity costs, your money's not working.
Right, that's the biggest risk right there.
Yeah, your money's not working at all. And there's no chance that you're going to move forward in terms of financial progression without putting this money to work. So you risk the opportunity to progress. And you're really paying the bank to hold your money. I hope people realize that. Like, I had a aha moment where, you know, what are we paying for? And, you know, think about it. If you have a bag of money right here, if there's no banks, what do you do with it? Well, you bury it in your yard out here. You
hide under the mattress.
I cut a wall out in the hole out in the wall. I get it safe. But due to the fact that we have banks, we don't have to do that. That is what we pay for. So we pay for convenience in case tomorrow I need a couple $1,000s. I can go to the bank and get it tomorrow. Okay.
Right.
That is a service that we're paying for. But now, once we have what we need for our spontaneous or unexpected expenses, whatever we're comfortable with, anything beyond that, why is it in the bank? Why?
That's a great question.
Just why? Yeah. We've been sold a message saying that, hey, we need to save. Yeah, you need to save to a degree.
Yeah.
But then the risk of not save, the risk of not putting your money to work mm-hmm. starts to outweigh the benefit of saving.
Exactly.
Especially in the light of a very inflationary period that we may be approaching. You can magnify that times two.
That's true.
That's the risk. The risk is saving too much in an inflationary period. That's the risk. Yeah. But, you know, hey, so you got to make it work.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so when we're talking about these risks, are you studying the market or are you predicting? Like, how do you, like, you said something profound, like this is your capital of risk. Mm-hmm. Are you just doing this by experience or how are you learning how to use your capital wisely? Because of course we know the bank isn't it.
We gain wisdom through experience and if you have experience, you must take action. And so that action is either invest in an opportunity mm-hmm. or read. You know, I try to do it all. I mean, it's a lifestyle. So I don't watch a lot of television. I don't spend, you know, all day watching basketball. I play basketball, but I don't watch basketball all day. I watch SportsCenter and get the clips. I'd rather look at a podcast. I'd rather read a book. I'd rather listen to an audiobook. You know, those are actions. We're students all the time. You know, so, but again, you got to line yourself up in something that you love to read and talk about. Fortunately for me, I enjoy reading and mm-hmm. learning about real estate and also how to just grow my balance sheet. I like that. And for me, mm-hmm. it equates to empowerment and freedom. And again, it makes me less and less dependent on jobs. And so for me, I value that as success.
I love that. Okay, so with joint ventures, mm-hmm. we have down how to find the partner, making sure that the alignment is there. Then we go from pretty much if we're going to provide the capital mm-hmm. or we're going to be the property manager.
Right.
Now, let me ask you this. From a property manager side, how do we know how to find the one that is providing the capital? Is there something we need to be looking for? How much money they need to have in the bank to make sure they are legit? Or as experienced as you, because we may not have the money. I know a lot of people listening don't, but they might say, okay, how can I find somebody like Cleon? So what should we be looking for?
That's a good question. Experience. As an investor, and the reason I say that is this, because if somebody, let's say you had a house, a great mm-hmm. deal, but you didn't have the capital, and you approach somebody who has capital, but they don't have a real estate experience, well, they may not be the best partner because they're going to drive by the house and see a total gut job and get, you know, they may freak out. They may want to do more than they need to. They may want to try to run the project and they have zero experience. So that wouldn't be a good partner. So ideally you want somebody with real estate experience. Mm-hmm. Older, because what one of the main motivators is, you know, over time you want to be more passive. I'm not the same as I was at 30, you know. So having being freed up of time is more attractive to me than maybe when I was at 32 when I wanted to do it all, you know.
Right.
So if you find somebody middle aged who's like they understand real estate, but they're kind of they've been in it for a while and they like okay. I like the energy and this idea and the vision of this. Yeah, I'll invest in this person. That's what you kind of want.
Okay.
That's not kind of want. I think that would be ideal.
Okay. That's good. Okay. So now that we have talked about joint ventures, I think you did a really good job, Cleon.
Thank you.
I definitely would have a very good segment with you about being financially lit because that is where you are the best teacher. And I've even asked you to be my money mentor because of your money mindset. So I've got to spend the remainder of this getting into your brain. And you said something so profound earlier when you said this is a lifestyle.
It is.
And nobody really talks about that, because it's like, when much is given, much is required. Like, you can't, there's no time to watch TV. There's mm-hmm. no time to go and do the things that other people do. One thing that I always talk about when I talk to investors on the podcast is like, hey, what book did you read? And we always say unanimously, Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a game changer. It changed my life in college, and it's planted a seed, and it just would never go.
Right.
And now it was finally, well, it has been, but I'm seeing reward of reading that book. But one thing about it, when I was looking at it on Amazon, it's been sold over a million times.
Yeah.
But a million people are not doing this. And I think the disconnect is that it is a lifestyle. It's not, you just read the book and then you go back to watching TV or going to a game. You have to continuously feed yourself and be around those people.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about this lifestyle in this financially lit segment. Besides Rich Dad, Poor Dad, what other books are you reading to keep you mentally fit, or that change the game that you recommend to other people?
Right now I'm on this book called, it's really good. It's called Set for Life. I don't know the name, the target, the author, but
okay.
Look it up and provide that later. I can't look it up, but it's called Set for Life. And, I'm looking it up in my phone right now. Hold on, I'll tell you. Set for Life. It's a strong book by Scott Trench.
Okay, I have not heard of that one.
Yeah, and I'm also right now reading the book on flipping houses by Jay Scott.
I have that book.
Yeah.
Where is it? It used to stay up here. It's somewhere. I have that book.
But then there's another one I recommend. The Algebra of Happiness by Scott Galloway. It's a good book too.
Huh.
Yeah, those are the three I'm going to recommend.
Okay, so you did more of a wellness book, a wealth book, and a real estate book.
Yeah, I mean, because you know, what I've learned, the success is not just financial; it's also spiritual. It's also a relational success. You can.
Yeah,
I've learned that you have to be just as intentional on the personal side. We don't talk enough about the science of mating. We don't talk enough about, who is, what did I just say? Alignment, right?
Alignment. Yeah.
Values, vision, alignment. Mm-hmm. We need to have the same three-pronged approach towards parenting. If I want to be a successful parent, I think I need to, and I want to form a joint venture that be parents.
Yep.
Don't you think I need to? I didn't think. Don't you think that?
I didn't think either, Cleon. It's okay.
But don't you think that it would be important to ask yourself those same things? What are their values? Yeah. What's their vision?
Yeah.
There's no right or wrong, but does it align with what is in my heart? And if so, we'll form a synergistic partnership to reproduce.
Mm-hmm.
And we can share the fruits of that success.
Right.
Couldn't that be the goal of that? So I've learned that, you got to be intentional there too, because all investing is planting seeds
mm-hmm.
and letting time water those seeds. And then the harvest comes.
Right.
And if you don't plant good, if you don't plan and plant, your harvest, you don't know what you're going to get. And the other thing is people mm-hmm. always see the harvest. They don't see the planting season. They don't see the time season.
Yeah.
And especially in this society, they see certain things that, I didn't get a lot of questions about real estate. It was easy to fly under the radar until the manifestation of things start to show.
Yeah.
Quickly, my default is, look, I've been doing this for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't start yesterday.
Yeah.
And that's why you gotta enjoy or be interested. And that's why it has to be a lifestyle. Because
you're
time into this thing.
Yeah. Yeah, because you can't plant the seed and expect the harvest tomorrow.
No.
Yeah. I think that's the biggest misconception about real estate investing. It's like, oh, okay, I bought the house, now I'm wealthy. It don't work like that.
It's a series of steps that take place over time.
Yeah.
But the earlier the better, because it does require time. And so, I tell young people all the time, if you're really interested in it, go ahead and start and take steps, because you're at a different, 38 is different than 28. 48 is different than 38 and 28. And it's harder to to do things when you're old. So go ahead and just get out there at 25 if you can.
Yeah. Okay, so what was the biggest lesson, and you have so many, and you can share them, about money that you didn't learn in school, besides the bank?
That boy, you told me to be brief. Now that I can't, that's the
what, can expound on this
what didn't I, you said what didn't I learn about money? What about didn't I learn in school?
Yeah, what have you learned about money that you didn't learn in school? Like a money lesson that has just stood out.
Everything. The number one though, summing up, is money works harder than you ever can. Money can work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Days a week, yes, while you're sleeping.
You can work 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, and you still can't keep up with the way money will work. So that's the number one lesson. And the number two lesson is replace you with assets. When you first start, you are the consumer.
Leon, that needs to be the name of your book. I'm just letting you know you need to write that this afternoon.
Well, thank you.
Put that out there. Yeah, that's the title.
Hey, Kimi. Hey, all right, let's go. you need to replace you because you right. And when you start, you are a consumer for everything. And you want to replace you with assets. Mm-hmm. So that years later, you are freed up.
Yeah.
Assets replace you and they become the consumer. And therefore, like I said, if you like this, allow your assets to buy that.
Right.
But if you never, ever replace you with assets, you will not be free of time. You will always have to put maximum amount of time in to get maximum amount of consumption. And you don't want to do that. The earlier you replace you, the freer you are. And then again, the job still is a part of your portfolio, but it's... Mm-hmm. Not keeping lights on.
Yeah. So pretty much for those that are probably having an aha moment, to clarify what Cleon just said, it's pretty much like if you have property 123 on Smith Street and you're mm-hmm. making a income, rental income of about $700, mm-hmm. that $700 can pay your mortgage. So you don't have to work as hard.
Right.
And you buy another property.
Exactly.
Next door, 1234 Smith Street, or across the street, is bringing in $800. That $800 is now providing paying your Tesla note.
Yep.
That's another reason that's freeing up your time, because you don't have to work, because that money that you've invested is working for you. Then let's say you buy the property next to it, 1235 Smith Street. That one's paying for your vacation. That one's paying for or college tuition for your kids. That's what you're saying.
That's lifestyle.
And that's lifestyle.
Exactly. So, you know, you start thinking about it in terms of investing. So, for instance, you say, hey, I like that Porsche. How many houses, if that's what I do, how many houses do I need to buy to produce the income to, you don't buy the Porsche, you let your houses buy it.
When
the Porsche is paid off, you still got the houses. And
the property's appreciating.
Right. Yeah. If you want to vacay, you want to dedicate, you know, $20,000 towards vacations.
Mm-hmm.
Say, well, what do I need to produce? Or let's make it $24,000.
Let me ask you this. Just had an epiphany. Is this how you find your deals? Like you're buying homes. Is that how you base it upon, okay, I want this. Let me find a property that can pay for that for me.
No, not really. Okay. My main driver was, how many houses do I need to not be dependent on the job? That was my number one drive. So it's kind of like that, but it wasn't so specific. But once you get to a point where your job, you're free of your job, then you can start to play. It becomes an experiment again. You know.
Okay, so you're beginning with the end in mind.
Yeah. Okay. So first and foremost, you get the dependence on the job out the way, you know. And then, like, if you want to say my house paid off or my car paid off, personally debt free. Knock that out. Mm-hmm. And then once you get to that, because imagine, think about it this way. Let's say you don't have a house note, no mortgage, no personal mortgage.
Right.
No personal car note. And let's say you're making $12,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now you can start to freelance a little bit and say, okay, whatever it is, that go back to the Porsche again. You know,
okay, the Porsche.
You know, how many houses do I need to take care of that Porsche note? Let's say you want to lease it. I wouldn't do that, but let's just say you put a budget in for $1,200 a month. Mm-hmm. Now you can either say you got the 12 coming in, and you can just say, look, you could just say, I'm gonna pick out these two houses I already have, and they're gonna be only
dedicated.
Yeah. Or you can say, well, I don't want to disrupt that, and I'm just gonna buy two more houses
to pay for the Porsche.
Exactly. And think about it though. Think about it. Mm-hmm. At that point, do you ever have to say, I got to work and get an increase on my job? I got to get promoted to manager.
I got to go back to school, get another degree.
Yeah. Did that ever come out the equation?
No.
No. Mm-mm. It's about what investment and how do I make an investment for me to get that?
Yeah.
And that is, so you are free of that. You don't have to put in more time in order to get the consumption that you're looking for.
Yeah. And even now, if you're listening and you still say, okay, but I don't have the money, not necessarily true, because there are investors out there like Cleon who have the capital, who are willing to invest in you.
Right.
So that you can get this property. You can get the
another example is, you know, uh-huh. First, I've said, you know, before, let's say a person has $20,000. Okay, let's break it down even further. Let's say they have they always ask, how much do you need a month to live your lifestyle currently?
Right.
Let's say a person says, I need $3,000 a month to do what I do. Mm-hmm. All right. And let's say that they have, $50,000 in the bank. So I would say, how many months of income do you need to be comfortable for unexpected things?
Yes.
They say 6 months. I say, okay, $3,000 times six, that's $18,000. Mm-hmm. But you got 50 in the bank. So that's an extra $32,000 that's just sitting in the bank. And basically, again, the risk of that is that is not doing anything. That's a risk, right? Mm-hmm. So why not find somebody who, is it enough to buy a house? No, but could you be a partner?
Yes.
So let's just say I buy a house and the project's going to, you know, let's say the house costs $100,000 and we're going to put $50,000 in it.
Okay.
I want to make it simple math. So let's just say we're going to buy it for $70,000 and put $30,000 in it. Total investment $100,000.
Okay.
Now you got $32,000 sitting on the sideline. Why not just say, hey, look, let me take a look at that house. I mean, I think I'm comfortable with that. Could I put $30,000 into your project? And I say, yeah. The project's $100,000. $30,000 is 30%. So you're investing 30% into the deal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And when the house is sold, you get 30% of the net profits plus your $30,000 back.
Right.
Versus that 30. Now, let's just say the house sells for $150,000 profit,
mm-hmm.
clean 50. Wow. Oh, 30% of that is what? 50,000, 5,000 times 15,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now you get your 30,000 plus your 15,000. Let's say the project takes 4.5 months.
Yeah.
Now you maybe we'll see the risk of leaving the money in the bank. Let's see what that $30,000 in the bank looks like.
You will not see $15,000 after 4 months. Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah.
So did you have to did you have to buy the house yourself? No. Mm-hmm. Did you even have to really be in love with real estate? No.
Mm-mm.
You just need to align. Align. With people who do.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, why not do that?
Yeah, that's the question. Why not?
Maybe it's not even the real estate. Maybe you are starting a business,
mm-hmm.
and we grew up together, and we still talk all the time. Maybe I just invest in your business. But I mean, why? But my point is, why are you just leaving the money and just sitting in the damn bank?
Yeah.
Beyond what we need, and like I said, there's a purpose for banks. I'm not knocking banks. I'm not. Yeah. I'm just saying, once we get beyond what we need, why are we saving more?
Cleon, you nailed that. Beyond what we need.
Yeah.
That's it right there.
That's it. So yeah, that's what schools never taught us that.
They taught us how to write the checks. I remember that.
How to write checks. How to be good employees.
Yeah. Create the resumes.
Yeah. How to be good employees.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? You are a business too. It's like, when you approach a job, you are helping a company make profits and make positive returns, and they pay you so that you can help, so that they should pay you so that you can help feed your business as well.
Right.
And not just be a bucket carrier from one business to another with buying stuff. And we want to do that because we're bombarded with advertisements saying we're not this, we're not that, unless we buy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to feel validated by having stuff.
Yes.
And that gets old because there's always a new, we're on we're on the I-13 now, or 12 or whatever. So it's not I-1, I-2. Next year it'll be a 14 and 15. Yes. And here we have to have the next new model of this and that.
Mm-hmm.
We're always on the wheel, the hamster wheel, because we're buying stuff.
We're consuming.
And we're not building stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Build first, then play along with the buy. That's all I'm saying.
That's a good one, Cleon. I like that. Okay.
Just get behind that a little bit. Understand the why behind it.
COVID-19, how did that work with your business?
Great. Thankfully, I mean, we did well. That really speaks to the rental business. You know, my main focus is the rental business. I mean, that's what I do. You know, that's what I always say my bread and butter is there. So for the months of last year, we exceeded expectations for collections. I think the average rental company had I think they were like at 91%.
Mm-hmm.
But we were at 99% to 100%.
Awesome.
For April, May, and June of last year.
Okay.
And so we fared well.
I'm glad you said that. So now we can kind of dispel this myth about that moratorium, that landlords are not getting paid because of COVID-19. Because I haven't missed a check. I have not missed any.
Right. So and I'll say this, that moratorium I think it depends on where you are.
Yeah.
I think it depends some states are more tenant friendly or landlord friendly than others.
Yeah.
And I do think that moratorium is a true, it's an issue. Let's just put it that way. It's something. Yeah. I'm not discounting that. But you got to have, all we did was like say, hey, how can we work with it? You know, with the moratorium comes 22 billion or billions of dollars of rental assistance. And so we were very proactive in terms of helping lead people down the road of agencies that were available to help you.
Mm-hmm.
So we just had to again plan and say this is how we're going to do things under these scenarios.
That's a good point, because I think a lot of people, the reason why I mention that is because when, of course, I talk to people about real estate investing and how to get started, and they're always saying, oh, I don't want to become a landlord because people aren't paying rent. I'm like, that's not true.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
You got to learn how to adjust to the changing environment.
Exactly.
I do think it has made the rental business less desirable.
But the need is there, though. That's the
The need is there. And exactly. It's just, you have to do, again, you have to be a student. You got to do your homework. You got to, you got to put in, you got to have plans and think about this. It's got to be a life. It's got to be a lifestyle. Again,
it's got to be a lifestyle.
You got to be willing to read about or read articles. I think, you know, read blogs, figure out how to get linked up with people online and virtually and figure out how they're doing things and implement that into your
system. That's a great point. That's a great point.
You got to be willing to do that. Yeah.
Okay. So question, since you said that, you know, the bulk of your portfolio is rentals, and then you're also flipping in this joint venture partnership that you have, how do you determine when you're going to keep it or when you're going to flip it?
Great question again. I think it just depends on the season, you know, it depends on what's going on in the environment, in the market. So, you know, right now we got a situation where it's a seller's market. So that tends with low inventory. So,
you know,
that puts you out, that makes it, that swings the pendulum towards sales.
Yeah.
You know, also depends on where you are as an investor.
Mm-hmm.
So if I was 28 years old and I had one rental, I would want to build my rental portfolio.
You are dropping bombs, Cleon.
Cleon.
Keep on. You're going.
But you know, that would have, so building and keeping the property would outweigh selling a good deal away.
Absolutely.
But if you've been in the game for a while and you have a mature rental business, well, then you may be willing more so to just say, hey, let's sell this.
Yes.
You find your sweet spot. You really do.
Yeah.
You find your sweet spot in terms of how many rentals do I want to keep? And then when I get beyond that, I'm willing to sell some.
Yeah.
You know, I almost say, you get to a point where you get, I joke with my uncle, I'll say, you buy two, sell two. You buy two, sell two.
Ah.
Yeah. You get,
okay.
Because you, it's almost like trading stocks. You know,
you keep
a core amount,
mm-hmm.
but let's say your comfort level or your level that produces mm-hmm. the income that you need for your staff, for your lifestyle,
right.
is X,
mm-hmm.
and you get to X plus two. Well, now you may sell, you
nice.
Know, and they get you back to X.
Yeah,
you always pick up the deals. But what you do with the deals, may get two new houses and sell two old houses that you bought in 2008.
Nice.
That shows out.
Because it all depends on your strategy, pretty much, not also what the market is doing. Because if like you said something great about that age, though.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on a lot of variables.
Yeah.
And that's why we can't compare. I can't compare.
No, you can't.
What you're doing, because you're at a different place. I'm at a different place.
Yes.
I got a different goal set. We cannot compare. Just because I sit here and I talk all day about this,
yes.
I mean, you need to do it. You can learn from it and incorporate it into what you're trying to do.
Yes. I will always say my real estate mentor told me this a long time ago, and I keep saying this. You can put seven real estate investors in front of one house.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have seven different strategies, seven different ways they're going to do it.
Right.
Exit strategies, how much money they're going to make. It's not going to be the same because everybody's journey and goals are different.
Exactly. And that's the one thing I think about this, you know, about what I'm seeing out here, you know, people talking this and that. And, you know, you can't, that doesn't mean you got to be all in on that.
Yeah.
You just got to figure out now what, but the one thing, if I say something that resonates, and then again, aligns with where you are and what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
go all in on that.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, it just depends.
Great point. Now I get it. I get it now. Nice. Oh my God. Okay. So Cleo, what are your goals for 2021? Just on second quarter.
For 2021, have a certain amount of flips I want to hit.
Okay.
But one of my growing goal is I want to do more in terms of helping individuals become homeowners. So I really like to rehab houses
mm-hmm.
and sell those houses without necessarily going through the bank. So,
oh my gosh. Okay, you got to tell us how you're doing that.
Yeah.
It's big.
Yeah. So
especially for minorities.
Exactly. So So let's say I have a house, and typically a person would go to, it's lending. Typically, someone would go to Bank of America and apply for a loan.
Yeah.
And go through the process and then get the loan to buy the house. Well, what I'm doing is I'm saying, well, I'll be the bank. You don't have to go to the bank. I'll be the bank.
Okay.
You know, and so
the Bank of Cleon.
Yeah, yeah.
Go ahead.
Coleman Trust.
I'll take that.
But yeah, but so, you know, so we'll meet, we'll discuss, and then you give me a down payment.
Mm-hmm.
We'll work out the terms. That's a win-win. And then I'll hold the note. And you pay me a mortgage. And once you satisfy that, you own it free and clear. That's fulfilling. If I could do that, that's one of those things where if I could, there's no number as to how many, if I did that 10x, 1000x, 20x, whatever,
yes,
it would be just fine, because it really does change lives. I mean,
you're closing the wealth gap.
Exactly. Exactly. That's, it's helping
huge.
People be homeowners, which, like you said, changes the wealth, their bottom line, gives them an increase in net worth, changes the community. You know, a house that was distressed in a lot of cases,
mm-hmm,
the home, and provides an anchor family for that community.
Yeah.
You know, and it provides another means for me to take care of my family. So it's a win-win-win situation. And if I can do that more, that'd be mm-hmm great.
So is that what you're doing with each flip that you guys finish?
It depends. It depends okay on variables. Not with each.
Not with each. Okay.
I can't do it with, you know, there's certain variables that have to play out for me to be able to do that.
Okay.
And offer that. But I do want to expand that. And that's one of my goals. As a matter of fact, I would like to do another one this year if I could.
I got to have you back, because we definitely have to talk about that. That is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm all about that. I'm all about home, helping people be homeowners.
Yeah. Yeah. That's big.
Mm-hmm.
That's big. And you hardly hear that, because like you said, like, everybody thinks that we have to go to the bank to get pre-approved.
You don't. I bought an apartment complex without the bank. Zero. No banks. 12.
Okay. How'd you do that?
Same thing. Lady owned the apartments free and clear, and asked her. It was the reverse. I said, "Would you be willing to be the bank?"
Okay, so you did the seller financing.
Yeah, and what happened was, she said, not only did she say yes, but she was willing to. Her terms were better than the banks. A bank normally most banks are only going to give you 20-year amortization.
Mm-hmm.
I had a 25-year amortization with her. Yeah.
Are you serious?
Absolutely. Yeah. And then
how much did she want down?
25%.
That's it.
Yeah, it was great. And then somebody, I kid you not, then 6 weeks later, somebody offered me, they came to me with an offer that was $85,000 over what I paid for it. 6 weeks later. But they couldn't we got the contract.
Mm-hmm.
They could not actually close. Their lender required 6 months seasoning.
Okay.
So I think it looked
like a flip. Cause I see why. Right. Cause it seemed like it was a flip.
So that allowed me to cash flow for 6 months plus the 85. And that was no banks.
That was dope.
Mm-hmm. That was a great deal.
That was a great deal.
That was a great deal.
So Cleo, what is your ultimate goal?
That's a good question. Ultimate goal for real estate
or
for life?
I mean, this is your lifestyle, so I'm pretty sure real estate is involved.
You know, it is. I want to maximize the moment each and every day. Okay. I want to build a legacy for my family for my kids and then my kids' kids. I really want to leave values with them to where they create jobs and don't apply for jobs. And
can you repeat what you just said?
I tell them, I said, we create jobs. We don't apply for jobs. And I want them to have that mentality. Yeah. And I don't, I really want to be able to, really, to be honest, I want to have an international location that I'm familiar with that I spend significant periods of time in. So, you know, if you put me in Atlanta, I know how to navigate it. I know where I want to stay. I know where the supermarkets are. I know, but I want an international city that where I'm just as familiar. So that's, I want to be able to do this maybe from sitting from in Ghana or Colombia or so I want to systemize my business so that I don't have to be in the U.S. if I don't want to be here.
Nice.
Yeah.
And Leon, I think that's not it. That's, I'm pretty sure after that, you got to get some more stuff.
No, not, you know, I eventually, you know, like I said, you know, success is relational too. So I went, you know, I want to further, you know, to grow my relationships.
Yeah.
Eventually share, you know, also maybe share successes with somebody in house. Yeah. You know, maybe, I don't know.
Never know what God has. That's the amazing part. That's what's so dope about this.
Joint venture, right?
Yeah.
Joint venture on the
planet. Yeah.
In all
got it. Cleon, how can we find you?
Right now, let's just do Facebook.
Okay.
Cleon, I'm in Facebook.
All right.
Let's just do that.
Okay. Well, we'll definitely put your Facebook information in the show notes.
Yeah, that's cool. And just, hey, everybody, if you're listening and watching this, let Kendall know if you, and then still let me know.
That'll work. Leon.
Thank you.
I enjoyed this. Like we were back in high school all over again.
I love it.
You got to come back because I want to talk about the seller financing with first time owners for real.
All right, I'll do that.
That is definitely something that we could share for sure. And anytime you want to come back, it's open.
Likewise. If you want me to come, I'll come. Just let me know.
Thank you.
To learn more about Cleon, just go to our website, lightinguprealestate.com. I also have a brand new website, mylifeinrealestate.com. It's a lifestyle blog showing you all the ins and outs of my life in real estate investing. You can see my latest rehab, search articles teaching you how to invest in real estate, get all episodes of the podcast, shop our merchandise, get free documents, and more. That is mylifeinrealestate.com. That's all for now. Stay safe, stay sane, and stay lit.